99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy March Madness Thursday, Birds. We've been on the air on Thursday nights a couple awesome times in the last 2 years. We've had MLB opening day. We've had football's kickoff. We've had the NFL draft. We had the day that ISU fired their athletic director. We've had a lot of awesome stories and big days to talk about on the Red Zone on Thursday nights with a big Thursday behind us. I would say in the 2 years I've hosted the show, I've never been more excited to talk live on a Thursday than today amid March Madness. We'll get into it more in the show, but are there any brackets totally busted on this panel of guests today among you both?
No, it's going all right. We'll talk obviously more about our picks later, I think, but the Nevada loss that just happened was tough. I didn't have them moving very much farther. The only Sweet 16 team I've lost thus far is BYU, and I know that was unpopular amongst most people in Illinois, but that's all I kind of have, and it's been going pretty well so far.
I had BYU losing in that one, so I felt good about that. Felt good about my Illini that I've loved since I was a kid. Not happy about Nevada losing in just a catastrophic way. But I'm still, you know, that's a little bit costly, definitely. But, you know, I'm still alive.
It's one pick, but it's just when it's going so well. Were you perfect up until that point?
I wasn't perfect. Oh, okay. I had a couple.
Okay.
Other,
but yeah, when it's going well to the point where you haven't really lost teams deep in the tournament, like a team like Nevada, who is technically an upset, even though they were the favorite, blows a game like that. It's just so disappointing.
All right, we'll do more of this later, but I want to do one more point before we end the quick March Madness opener. Have you ever seen more hype for a pre-upset than this McNeese-Gonzaga nonsense that's going around the circles? I've never seen people more excited for a potential upset.
Yeah, no, they've got a phenomenal record and a phenomenal amount of teams they've beaten, like the College of Biblical Studies, Champion Christian, Laterno, who I just found out how to pronounce their name, the Mississippi University for Women. There is a lot of teams in the non-con, and they make it. If Indiana State could have played teams like them, maybe they would have made the tournament too.
Sprinkled in there randomly, though, is like Michigan, UAB, VCU, a number of tourney or non-tourney teams. Ben actually caught me in a kind of a funny moment earlier. I was reading off all these weird teams that McNeese has beaten their 30-win season. I'm like, who is Virginia Commonwealth? He's like, that's just VCU. I'm like, oh. And I looked at the logo. I'm like, I've never actually said it out loud. Like, that's kind of funny. It's just the Rams. So I was happy to at least admit my fault there. Ben, you were saying you already have the high hopes for McNeese.
Yeah, I have them in the Sweet 16. They are a high-scoring offense because I also have Samford beating Kansas. So it ended
that's
up being
more popular,
a 12-13 matchup in the next round. So there's a lot of hype with McNeese. I know that a lot of people, as you said, a lot of people have been talking about them. And it is a fun stat that teams that win over 30 games in their season usually win at least one March Madness game, even if it's a team like McNeese who has, what do they have, 35 wins on the season?
30 and 3.
So they're one loss short of the most wins in the country, which is
17-1 in their conference,
JMU,
which is,
so,
what is their conference? I'm putting you on the spot. Brandon, do you know?
17-1. Which team?
McNeese.
McNeese plays in the conference where Nichols and Carnot were.
Southland Conference.
Yeah, the Southland.
Steve would have ripped that one.
Yeah, he would have. The Southland Conference, which I'll be honest, I don't know much about.
If I would have scrolled a little
bit
further,
like, you can't even
that.
Really know. I don't even really know who most of these teams are in the. If you look at the top
usually that team all the way on the far right makes the tournament.
There's
in
a
that
team.
Conference.
There's a team on there that looks like the Milwaukee Admirals minor league hockey.
Yeah,
logo,
I was going to say.
If that means anything, but I don't. It's not obviously them. I love that their radio station, too, that they advertise on their home games is Magic 92.1. That's awesome. Magic 92.1 is going to be rocking tonight if they find a way to beat the Zags. All right, we got to talk more about March Madness later. We could do that for the whole hour. We got lots more to talk about. We missed the episode last week, of course, it being spring break. Lots of Bears news. Of course, lots of Redbird news. Let's start there.
Let's start with the men's tournament. Obviously, we, last time we were on air for Red Zone, me and Ben were previewing the men's tournament against Evansville, and Braden was on the call with Joey and Julian. And if you can, you know, kind of turn your brain back 2 weeks, I'll try here too. That was a rough game and a rough way to end the season for Ryan Peden and the Redbirds in year two. 59-53 loss to Evansville. Braden, you were Mike Breen there in St. Louis. What can you tell us about that loss?
Well, it was a team in Illinois State that does not score a crazy amount but defends well against a team that doesn't do either well, but they had an overpowered player that was just insane, and he played insane. They rested their star player, and they were able to bring him back in and have him play. And having that extra rest, the game and a half before their tournament started, really worked out for them. He was able to carry them all the way to a win, and then after that, their luck was over. They lost to two seed Drake that ended up winning the tournament. So that was how that went, and you kind of expect that either they were going to win that one game against one of the other really bad teams in the conference, or they were going to win barely and then lose badly. So I think it was still a very fun tournament. So
yeah, some content that came from it. We can kind of cue with that right into your story. If you want to introduce it real quick, though.
Yeah, no,
you
for sure.
It.
So Todd Thomas, all the other context is explained here shortly in the wrap. But just before we begin, Todd Thomas and I are two people that are both from BMET, Illinois. That was where I went to high school. My dad, Kurt, he was best friends with Todd. Todd, very good in football, and of course, he had a very shining personality. He's become, what he's become now by being forged in the fires of the Little Okaw Valley Conference. And now, to bring it to you, just my takeaway from this MVC tournament in St. Louis was my talk to Todd Thomas. So here it is. The Missouri Valley Conference Tournament is a spectacle. Todd Thomas, the owner of Porta Party DJs and MC for the St. Louis Cardinals, also works as an MC for the Arch Madness Tournament in St. Louis. Newly inducted MVC Hall of Famer Tom LaMonica explains what he adds to a game.
That guy is like a magician. He gets people riveted during timeouts. He's interviewing people, he's conducting contests, he's asking questions, and his out cue is always the same.
As your team, you win this game and I make some noise!
With being so revered even among other MCs at his level, he could likely take this show to any other conference tournament if he wanted to. Thomas explains what keeps him coming back to the Valley.
It's in St. Louis, which is where I live now. My alma mater is, SIU Carbondale, and so lots of friends are always in town for this weekend. Plus, the Missouri Valley Conference family has been so special to me over the years of how they've treated me and how great of a program and tournament that they run.
Being an SIU alum, bias could be a factor when on camera. But to Thomas, he prefers to spend his conference tournament riling up the fan base of much bigger rivals in St. Louis than any MVC foes.
I did a top three, which is kind of like a family feud sort of thing. Top three answers are on the board. And it was top three Chicago professional sports teams. And I chose, in order, Bulls, Blackhawks, Bears. What do you think I left off?
Show me the Cubs! Yeah, of course not. We're not going to put that up there.
With the experience Thomas has, many would guess a weekend of tournament basketball would be easy for him. After the Valley expanded and the Thursday slate moved from two games to four, it's a much taller task for him.
Adding the additional teams and adding two more games on this first day is brutal. Because the normal two games on a Thursday night and then four games on a Friday, it was tolerable. But we're going back to back 2 days in a row of working, four games. It's just a long day.
Thomas resumes baseball action with the Cardinals on their home opener April 4th. For WZND, I'm Braden Fogerson.
Show me the Cubs. That was pretty funny. That's bold, though. I mean, we always make jokes that everyone at ISU except for you is north of ISU. So I think the same could be said for a lot of Valley students that might have been there at the game. That's bold to leave out the Cubs, but at least the Sox fans are probably happy.
It was fun. One bit that I love didn't get mentioned in the story, but we went to the Cards-Cubs game a year or two ago, and I got to watch him do pregame in Ballpark Village, and he had a Cubs fan next to him. And he said, "Well, what team are you rooting for today?" And she said the Cubs, and he said, I'm sorry. And then she said the Cubs, and he was like, no, I mean, I'm sorry.
That's good.
So he's definitely fun with the fans in that respect.
Yeah, it's absolutely impressive. I remember Tom LaMonica talking about Todd when you guys talked to him 2 weeks ago, and then we ended up using that interview during halftime during the conference tournament game. So he's definitely made his impact. If you got Tom LaMonica talking about you synonymously with the conference tournaments, you're doing something right. So we appreciate Todd for sitting down with you to talk about stuff like that. And yeah, it was an awesome interview. So thank you for that, Braden.
And now you guys get to talk about your tournament experience, which was Illinois State in the women's tournament. You guys at least were able to win a game before you got to go home. So
we beat Evansville, I guess. Yeah, we did. We beat Evansville by pretty good margin. We won against Evansville on that Thursday night, Ben and I on the call. And then Friday against you and I, just a heartbreaker. I mean, outscoring the Panthers by 7 in the second half, but just the single slowest quarter and a half I've ever seen them play. One of the slowest quarter and a half I've ever seen them play to start the game. I mean, we talked so much the day before with Gillespie in the presser about how important it is, a blessing in disguise, to not get that Friday bye and come in with fresher legs not fresher legs, but, you know, a little bit more wound up than the team you're playing. And it was the opposite effect. It was like ISU was dominant, and you and I had just slept soundly the night before and just came out flying, got down to, I think they were trailing by like 17 or something.
Yeah, and you and I's head coach even said in the press conference, because she came to talk before Coach Gillespie and the girls came to talk, and she was like, I'm so happy we got the day off. I think you and I's was very injured, it sounded like. And it was really cool, though, to see the banter between the coaches in the post-game press conference. I don't think I've ever seen two college programs in the same conference that have more respect for each other than you and I and ISU, because Coach Gillespie and you and I's coach just kept giving loving words, just praise, and how tough each team was. And, you know, Illinois State, really, they are the girls team is really tough. Obviously, you mentioned it, 1.5 quarters of just really bad basketball, and they fought hard and came back, and I think we're only down by 2. Yeah. I think that's how much they brought the 4 margin. Yeah. So I think it's a team that they're losing some really good players, and you know, Kate Bowman, who I think might have another year.
I don't know. It all depends.
But I think Deanna Wilson and Maya Wong are definitely done. And
after this weekend.
Yes. And I forgot that there's still more basketball to be played a second there. But I think it's a team with a really bright future still. There's a lot of good girls on that team that I think showed real flashes for what the future of this Redbirds program could bring.
And at the tournament last year, D looked very dejected, and you felt like there was definitely something missing from a team that was a one seed and had so much potential. And, you know, she said that she was going to run it back to try again this year, and to not get it again is definitely very frustrating. But the one solace in that is, you know, they spent their senior night saying, this is going to be the last time we play in CEFQ, and now they get another game in CEFQ they didn't expect.
She struggled a little bit on Thursday, Deanna Wilson. She played much better on Friday, but was very dejected in the post-game presser on Friday, within reason. But before we get into that WNIT thing, like you alluded to, Braden, I was editing the audio from that game today of Ben and I's call, and I was listening back to some of it towards the end of the game. And there was a very real scenario they could have still found a way, because it was Gillespie burned all three of her last timeouts within the last minute. So basically they would get a 3, foul, and then they would always call a timeout when they got the ball back. And they did that 3 times in a row. The first 2 times they hit a 3, it was it was Wong and Deja Smith.
Yeah.
And the third possession, they were down by 4, and they were down by 4, and the ISU had the ball out of a timeout. Alzma chucked up a 3, didn't get it, although she had 2 big threes before that, so it wasn't her fault. But she chucked up a 3, didn't get it. That would have made it a 1-point game, bringing you and I to the line. They missed, brought you and I to the line. That was basically all she wrote. Molly Lenz got a garbage time bucket. Right. But still almost found a way.
It was Abby Alzma's show in the second half.
Yeah.
Because even Coach Gillespie mentioned it, she was guarding you and I's best player the entire second half. So, and she did a pretty good job being able to lock her down. And then she hit a good amount of threes as well, so that was definitely fun to watch her kind of reel them back in. And Maya Wong had an exceptional weekend
Gillespie talked a lot in that presser about how you couldn't let Maya focus on being the leading scorer and also try and guard McDermott, an all-conference player, the entire game. I mean, the all-conference guard from UNI, Maya McDermott. So she let Alzma guard like basically the entire second half, and all of a sudden the second half started and Maya Wong was on fire. Ben's giving me the time signal. We're gonna have to wrap it up. Ben, of course, just the clock guy for the show. You're your unofficial title. I keep a clock tab on my computer, but you are right. Let's tease it real quick though. Me and Braden on Sunday, the WNIT, the Redbirds getting their fourth straight postseason bid. Braden,
and they play College of Charleston or USC Upstate. As of now, College of Charleston leads 11-3, but they're still early on.
Okay. All right, so a hot start for College of Charleston. That'll be at SEFT Arena, the fourth year in a row the Redbirds will play in the postseason. Braden now will have the call at 3:50 on Sunday night. Justin Fields took a trip during our spring break too. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he hasn't moved to Pittsburgh yet, but he got traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Bears franchise quarterback, as Gavin called him. Gavin Broderick, our news and sports operations director, a Lions fan, makes the joke that the Bears have a new franchise quarterback every time he turns the corner, but and it could be true as they're in line to draft another one. But let's talk first. Before we talk Caleb, let's talk Justin. You can't have one without the other. Fields apparently was being shopped the entire offseason, as we expected. The Colts contacted him. I can assume the Raiders probably did. And because Fields, the class act he always was, never particularly requested a trade, the Bears and Ryan Poles allowed Fields to kind of get an inadvertent no-trade clause unless he approved it.
Yeah.
So he had to approve where to get traded. He decided he wanted to go to the Steelers for a six-round conditional draft pick that become a fourth pick should he split enough games with Russell Wilson in the starting position. So, yeah, he's gone. The Bears have obviously made their intentions true. They're trying to draft Caleb Williams. The return is not as heavy as maybe it should have been, but I think the long offseason we saw of trying to trade Justin Fields proved his value was not the right future for the Bears.
Yeah, and going back to what you said earlier, we started off the offseason with Ryan Poles saying he wanted to do right by Justin Fields.
Right.
And Justin Fields, he played his cards right. He got to go where he wanted by not requesting a trade, and probably wanted to go where he wanted, probably thinks he has the best chance in Pittsburgh, and it's the end of an era, and I think some Bears fans are disappointed, and we could talk more about Fields, and I bet Braden has something to say as well, but I'll just say that I think the Bears are making the right move, and I wish Justin all the best. He tried to do as much as he could with as little possible, but I just don't think it would have worked out in the long run, this marriage between the Bears and Justin Fields.
Well, look, 3 years ago, you draft Fields. It's a completely different coaching staff. It's a bare bones offense, and you can do with it what you want to get it to fit Fields. And with a new staff that didn't draft him and a roster that got built and didn't really make his style of play work as much as you would have hoped, it just didn't work, and you had 3 years to try and prove yourself, and after 3 years, you can usually know whether a quarterback is just a really good player on a bad team or not able to be a game-changing player. And the Fields, he's definitely got talent. We saw what he was with Ohio State, but he just takes too long with the ball. He can't make decisions quick. He can't go through his progressions. He usually just likes to stick to his first read, and he doesn't work. And I think Williams is not only a much better option, but considering, you know, the alternative is drafting a different player, you're only maybe one player better than you would be without drafting a new quarterback, and you know that he's going to work better.
What you said earlier is absolutely perfect. You're going into a year where you have to make this decision on his contract.
Yeah.
And if there was even a question, why, and you have the number one pick on top of that, why do we have to stick with him? I feel bad for him because it's almost like the Bears ruined him. Mm. He had a bright future, but three offensive coordinators in 4 years, or no, Shane Waldron would have been his third if he stuck around. He needed to go somewhere where he could have a fresh start, and he's going to be fighting for time with Russell Wilson. Maybe that could be the best thing that could happen for his career, or the worst. We obviously only time will tell, but I think it was the right decision. And Braden, you kind of hit it all on the head right there with just, you know, it just wasn't ever going to work out really in Chicago.
There's a couple points here. Yeah, agreeing with both of you guys. Fields seems like a great guy, but I don't think you're going to look 10 years from now at Caleb Williams and C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young if he figures it out, or J.J. McCarthy or Drake May or any of these quarterbacks in two great quarterback classes over the last 2 years and be like, wow, we really kept Justin Fields instead of picking any of these eight names. I mean, I think you cannot have the number one overall pick 2 years in a row in a quarterback-heavy draft and stick with a guy who was drafted by the team of executives before you.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, Poles wanted to get value out of Fields, but at the end of the day, there's no blood in his hands. It was not his draft pick. He got what he could from the guy before him's draft pick, and he gets to go draft his own guy. Now, if Williams fails or whoever they draft, yeah, then it's Poles' head. But ultimately, this is Pace's guy at the end of the day.
And we're talking about the guy that's been the number one pick for 2 years. Like, he's been the number one pick for 2 years. We've been waiting for this. This is it feels like in the media the draft stock has fallen, but in all reality, for NFL teams, that draft stock has not fallen at all. They know exactly what they're getting out of Caleb Williams. And if it turns out to not work out, then whatever. It's on Poles' hands. But at the same time, I don't think no one's going to be regretting taking Caleb Williams, who's been this generational quarterback prospect, and having to ditch Justin Fields because everything we said, it just wasn't going to work out in the end.
Williams has like that extra like ability about him. You know what I mean? Like he has, at least in how people talk about him and in how executives talk about him. Like Mitch was like kind of like, oh yeah, he's a good prospect. Maybe it's a reach over Watson. Oh yeah, Fields is a good prospect. I don't know. It's a quarterback heavy class in 2021. Williams seems like from day one, the kind of guy that everyone is like, if this guy's not good, we don't know anything. And he's coming into potentially the greatest molded offense for a number one overall drafted quarterback of all time.
Yeah, we haven't even hit that part yet.
Yeah.
What the Bears have built this offseason to go along for Caleb Williams, if you've missed it, which you're probably sleeping under a rock. Keenan Allen and DeAndre Swift are both Bears to go along with DJ Moore and Cole Kmet. So, I mean, just watch the tape on Caleb Williams. I talked to Mikey maybe early this week, and I just looked at you and I go, he's Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, he is.
But the way that he plays, and he literally, when you watch interviews with him, he praises Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. And when you watch him play, every throw is off his, like, one foot, everything. And he's still mobile, too, so you're not you're not obviously getting the explosiveness of running that you get with Justin Fields, but Caleb Williams could still run, and he could just make the throw. Did you see the pro day throw yesterday?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was a thing of beauty. And I'm just excited for the capabilities that Caleb Williams brings and the potential as well. I think the Bears have finally found their franchise quarterback and what will end up going down as maybe the greatest quarterback in Bears history.
Here's
Is it
my
too
question.
Far to go and say
no,
that?
No, I think it's completely valid. He's so good. He's our Aaron Rodgers. It's a good point. And I think the media read of is he a good guy, is he not, I think that kind of supports that theory, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers is not necessarily going to cut by the book kind of guy. Like, I've openly talked about in this podcast before how much I'm not a huge fan of Aaron Rodgers for that reason. I think I would feel a little bit better about it if he was in a Bears jersey, that's for sure. Here's a question, and I'll bring in Braden on this too. Here's a question. Why is it that Bears fans, so many of them, have seen this as such a polarizing decision, but were so happy to ship off Mitch Trubisky? What is it about Justin Fields in 3 years that Mitch Trubisky in 3 or 4 years didn't have that people are so against the thought of moving on this early on?
I think going back to both of their drafting, Trubisky was a second overall pick. They traded up to get him. No one expected him to be considered the best quarterback in that draft, and the two quarterbacks drafted after him were incredibly good at football.
Yeah.
Both game changers, even with what horrible situation Deshaun Watson got himself into,
right,
still made much more impact than he ever did with the Bears. And then you get Fields, who goes off in the national championship semifinal and then gets drafted, and everyone expects him to be super good. It's a lot more likely that a lot of Bears fans are going to become attached to him. And so I think that's the difference from what I know. And maybe you have something to add to that, Ben.
I just think the biggest thing is we've never had a quarterback. And when you see someone with at least a little bit of talent, it's like,
fair enough.
It's the greatest quarterback we've ever seen.
I just think we're going
to. But the attachment to him, the attachment thing is weird, because I just don't understand how Bears fans, and I see them all over Twitter, and we talk to them as well, what this attachment is. If you don't realize that the Bears are getting better for the future, not even only the future, maybe next year by drafting Caleb Williams, you got to wake up, because everyone involved made the right move. I understand Bears fans' love for Justin Fields, because once again, he was just put through a really cruddy situation throughout his time in Chicago, but for the long run, this is just making the Chicago Bears better, and it's going to make them so much more fun to watch.
I just think in a couple of years, or even now, I think we need to like reconsider what we thought about Mitch Trubisky. I'm not saying that he was all-time good. I'm a fan, but I'm not saying he was all-time good. I'm not saying he was like the Bears made the wrong choice, you know, watching him go and drafting Fields. I think that was the right choice at the time. But it's like, I just don't get it. Mitch went to 2 playoff games. He won the division. Yes, he had like the best defense in the last 20 years of Bears behind him. But it's just, I don't know. I feel like it's weird that people are so ready to move on from Trubisky and draft a quarterback when it wasn't that clear cut of an answer of who to replace him with. And now that there's a clear cut favorite best quarterback prospect in apparently 10 years, people are so adamant that, hey, I'd rather stick with Fields. I just don't think I understand.
I'm just happy they're not repeating the cycle again, because if the Bears didn't make the playoffs this year, there was a good chance that the coach got fired, the GM got fired, and then they drafted it. Well, they could be repeating the cycle again. Who knows?
But
I just think that they're in such a better situation. You saw Eberflus and Poles yesterday just grinning from ear to ear watching Caleb Williams' pro day. Everyone knows where he's going. There's not a thought. Just Ryan Poles just trading Justin Fields showed his entire hand for the draft. So,
yep. I think there's a bias about winning, too, that, you know, everyone is trying to say, like, McCarthy, even though McCarthy is not it, and, you know, the guy from Washington, because they have won, and USC had such a terrible defense that even with a great quarterback and a good offense, they couldn't get it done. And I think, you know, that line of thinking kind of doesn't work, because when you take a really, really bad team, you don't know if a quarterback that took like the greatest team that's won a national championship since LSU is going to be able to turn it around with a team that's terrible in the opposite of that. But I think you do know with a player that has had to live in shootouts his whole college career and done his best, I think he's already proven himself a little bit in that situation.
All right, would you have liked Justin Fields on the Raiders?
I think it just would have been questionable how he fit in. I think there were reports that the Raiders were thinking about it and the Bears just kind of screwed it all up. But I think if we would have gotten Fields, we still wouldn't have been like, okay, that's our guy for 3 years.
No,
we still would have been like, okay, every single quarterback draft class we're looking at, like, is this guy better than Fields? And now that we don't have Fields, it's much more clear cut that we just know that we need to get someone.
Yeah.
It makes more sense for the Steelers. They signed Russ for a 1 year deal. I doubt it'll be any more than that. You have the Fields 5th year option, which I'm sure they'll pick up. You traded Kenny Pickett, who was like your guy to replace Big Ben. It makes a lot more sense for the Steelers. And I hope the best for Justin. We talk all this talk about, oh, I'm so excited to draft Caleb, but best of luck to Fields. Like, he's still only 25 years old.
Yeah.
He could have a very successful long career in football. And if at the end of the day, all we're talking about with Justin Fields is that he could have been a franchise quarterback for the Bears, as long as Caleb shows up, I'm okay with both of them having great success. You could call this rounding the bases, but instead it's just two sports stories we couldn't find time for a full segment for, because we've just got such a busy show today with March Madness, with the Bears. We got two big things we want to talk about for a couple minutes each. Let's keep it in the NFL first and talk about NFL free agency other than the Bears or other than Justin Fields. The dominoes started to fall really hard on one day last week. It really kind of started with Josh Jacobs to the Packers, and we'll start there with Braden Fogerson, our resident Raiders fan. Yeah, wow. Your Josh Jacobs is going to be a Green Bay Packer. That hurts me and Ben, and it hurts you. I think we're all in a support group for that.
I think we'll obviously miss him. He was my favorite player. Now both of my favorite teams I have nothing but irrelevant jerseys for. But it's been a good I think he was drafted in 2018. So what's that, 6 years of playing with the Raiders? I think that was a very solid I mean, he was just amazing. He was a workhorse. He was able to get a lot of stuff done. It's been several years in which he had missed maybe a couple games due to injury, and still, like, you know, when he's not there, you notice what impact he has. And we finally had a running back for the couple games that he was out this year that it felt like they weren't missing a beat. They were able to beat the Chiefs without him, for example, and that was nice. And to be able to have a good two back and to have it show that he was able to be so good, it was finally time for the Raiders to be like, well, we have one position that we're at least solid in without him. Move on and give him the chance to be much more successful because he very much deserves it. He's got a lot of talent, and literally every running back in the league underperformed to some degree, and that's why pretty much every single running back with a questionable future moved somewhere else.
The running back market is just, it just went crazy on Thursday and Friday last week, or excuse me, Monday and Tuesday. Just the implications, thinking about where some of these stars moved on from. We're just talking Austin Eckler is now a Commander. You mentioned Josh Jacobs is a Packer. Tony Pollard's a Titan. Like, I'm a big fantasy player, so some of the implications that it has on fantasy as well has been absolutely insane. But just run new faces everywhere, and it's just going to be really weird come kickoff next year when I see Tony Pollard in those blue Titans jerseys, and it's still going to be weird seeing Josh Jacobs in the Green Bay Packers. But the running back movement was, I think, the biggest story of it all, to go along with some quarterback moves as well and defensive players. And just I think it's so funny how NFL free agency wrapped up in 2 days and Jordan Montgomery still isn't signed yet.
I don't know if you guys mentioned this because I had to step away for a second, but did you mention Derrick Henry to the Ravens?
No, I didn't say that.
I walked in right as you were talking about the running back market. I didn't hear you say that. That's also really big. And well, of course, you're going to get the memes on Instagram of people saying, oh, who's going to play running back for the Ravens then, Lamar or Derrick Henry? Which is funny because half of the people commenting that were Steelers fans who just then got Justin Fields a week later. But that's neither here nor there.
Saquon's an Eagle, too.
Saquon's an Eagle. He's staying in the division.
Joe Mixon's a Texan.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Mixon deal too, because getting I'm blanking on the name, but the running back they got last year
Chase Young or no
the
Young.
Texans guy that they got from the Bills.
Singletary.
Yeah. Not only in fantasy but also just in terms of their offense, he was a really nice addition, and if they didn't have him they would have been missing
and
a lot.
Singletary's last year. A giant now,
And he's gone, and now you replace Singletary with an even better option if you ask me.
Last year was the year of what is the value of running backs. This year is the year of how do we pack, you know, the market with so many running backs, change teams. Yeah. I guess people said all last year, this is a terrible year for the value of the running back, because you saw these players holding out, Jonathan Taylor, Josh Jacobs, all these guys holding out because they wanted their contract. And then you saw so many people have season-ending injuries in the first 5 weeks.
They weren't really big contracts either. I think the only two that really got pretty hefty contracts was Saquon and Josh Jacobs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's weird. It's still gonna be hard to wrap my head around Austin Eckler in a Commander's jersey and Saquon in
There's
the Philly
so many.
Green and
DeAndre Swift on the Bears. It's all weird.
Another story from NFL free agency, which is we mentioned Tony Pollard chipping out of Dallas. Dallas still hasn't signed a free agent yet. Did you guys hear about this?
Yeah,
the only player that they've retained was their punter. They have not signed a single free agent yet. After Jerry Jones said, we're going all in this offseason.
But I don't know how much longer we're going to stay on this free agency topic, but another NFL free agency move that I want to mention, Scott Hansen and Andrew Siciliano signing with NBC to do effectively Red Zone, but for the Olympics. I don't enjoy the Olympics. My mom taught me to love the Olympics, and especially the Winter Olympics with like speed skating, for example, but I don't really like the Olympics that much, and I think maybe having something, even if it's on Peacock, just to have something that gives that sort of feel of there's a lot of stuff going on and it's all cool and we're going to give you everything we can and give you 7 hours of commercial-free long jump and stuff, like that is going to be maybe, you know, a nice addition to the broadcasting.
We're gonna get an Octobox here. We got we got the 200 in the top left. We got the hurdles in the bottom right. We have discus in the top right, and I don't even know. We have swimming in the bottom left, and in the middle, we have cricket. I don't even know. It's gonna be so awesome, and they call it Gold Zone, and I think it's gonna have a mostly American spin, obviously, because it's aiming towards an American market, Team USA fans. So I think that'll be awesome. It's a, like you said, Brandon, it's a welcome change to the way that the Olympics is marketed. I feel like the last Summer Olympics, in 2021. It was a pushback year because of the pandemic. I feel like no one talked about it. Like, I feel like people weren't really watching as much. This will be a welcome addition to the Olympics experience. That's
it
for
was
sure.
It was the 2020 Olympics in 2021. They right. still kept the name, like, yeah. 2020 Olympics.
The whole thing was weird. I don't think people knew it was going on, because if you saw Tokyo 2020 on your guide on cable, you probably would just be like, oh, that's a repeat. But, like, it's just – I don't think people knew it was going on. All right, let's completely flip the script here. There is a really big story going on in baseball, and it's not just that the Dodgers and Padres have kicked off their season before 28 other teams. Shohei Ohtani, who is, you know, if you're living under a rock, the biggest player on the planet for baseball, signed a $700 million deal this offseason with the Los Angeles Dodgers, the first ever $700 million professional athlete, is in a little bit of a hot water situation, I'd say, even though it's all just hearsay. For the time being, it looks like it's just his translator. Ben, you have his name better than I do.
Ipe.
His translator, Ipe, he, who's been with him since his days with the Angels. He's been with him to start his career with the Dodgers. Apparently, Ipe had some major theft of over $4 million somehow related to international gambling. And Ipe got fired from Shohei's team, the Dodgers, etc. One of you guys want to pick it up here where I left off, but it's just, yeah, it's a sticky situation.
It's murky for sure. And it's funny because when the initial report came out, it was just that Ipe stole $4.5 million from Shohei. His attorneys got involved. He got fired. But now there's more and more stuff coming out that makes this situation really, really murky, along with the fact that Shohei might have loaned him this $4.5 million. So now you're bringing into the fact that is Ipe placing bets for Shohei.
Right.
You hope that's not the case, but it's something that crosses your mind. And now, and the fact that he was in the dugout yesterday in Seoul, and it ended up, he ended up getting fired immediately after the game. And now the most recent report was that Shohei had no idea this was happening, even though his attorneys were involved. It's a really murky situation that I don't think is being talked about right now enough in the sports world for some odd reason. But it's very – I just think it's super interesting, and there could definitely be some massive fallout with this.
I'll tell you why it's not being talked about, and it's the point that I made about a month ago when I put a damper on your 21st birthday by talking about the problem with sports betting. All of the journalists, all of the media that is supposed to keep track of this and tell the story is all either majorly sponsored or owns a sports book,
yeah.
Or in Bally Sports case, which I don't know if they still do the Padres, but they did at one point. They were initially a sports book, and then just Fox Sports got too big and they took it over. All of the media that's in charge of keeping track of this stuff, they have reasons to have their hands tied. And so yeah. All of us are sitting here like, this is the info we know so far, but a lot of this is hearsay. We don't know how much of this is accurate. We don't know how much of this is, you know, being hidden from us, you know, any extra info. It's because we've just let it completely take over all at once. And now all of the media that's supposed to be able to tell us in a situation like this, where a superstar that is not going to need another dollar for the rest of his life if he doesn't want, his translator, who is like his best friend, gets fired for gambling on money, gambling on stuff that he didn't need. And it's because it's everywhere. So yeah.
Me and you talked about it a lot this morning, because me and Braden were at TV10 this morning. And so we get there at 7:30. Kelly Lambert, shout out, an awesome teacher here at the Illinois State School of Comm, huge baseball fan, had a huge monitor, like a huge screen,
yeah.
Like class presentation monitor wheeled into the room. And she connected one of – so I have dual monitors to do the running order for our new show. She had unplugged one of the dual monitors. And so I was using just one monitor, which is fine, first world problems. And she had – the HDMI to the big monitor showing the game on ESPN. And so it was like a surreal experience that it's 8 in the morning. I'm rubbing my eyes because I'm so tired. And Braden and I are watching the 7th inning of a Major League Baseball game. Like it was – we were talking all about it. And they were talking about it on the broadcast. And live on the Scorebug, I hope this is not the case whole season long on ESPN broadcast, live on the Scorebug, it's a live update of the win percentage based on every hit and run.
Mm-hmm.
And like for the betting audience, it is really silly that it's becoming such a – but I mean, we knew this would happen, but it's becoming such a big part of just the watching experience.
Yeah. Can we just talk about really quick, this might be a little bit of pivot into more baseball talk, about how the MLB started their season at 5 in the morning. I mean, for a sport that needs people to watch it. Premier player. With the premier players in the sport, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Fernando Tatis. Yeah, let's just start the game at 5 in the morning. Growing the game. That's all I got to say. Just
and then
dumb.
I didn't even
know that until I knew that they were playing this series, but I didn't know this counted towards regular season records until like 2 nights ago.
Yeah, I saw the same thing. They posted about it because I don't think very many people knew. And just my brother today texted me. He's like, wait, that counted? I'm like, yep. So they're both 1-1 now. But the weird, I think the Padres do too, but I just saw a post about the Dodgers schedule. The Dodgers have to go back and play a spring training series against the Angels.
Yes.
And then they open their season against the Cardinals.
It's so odd.
So you start the season in Korea against the Padres. You go back to spring training zone for the Dodgers, which it's I'm blanking right now where that is. It's, I'm assuming in Arizona. You do that against the Angels, and then you – so you have 2 games that mean something, 3 practice games, 3 scrimmages, and then you get to play real baseball games.
I think the Angels games are in either Dodger Stadium.
Yeah,
okay,
they do those games like in like an MLB setting, but it doesn't count.
Starters are going to play anyway. They're going to be coming home from Korea. Like they're at least not the first game, maybe the last game before opening day, just to get a couple hacks and 1 or 2 at bats. But it's just silly. Like I'm all about growing the game, but as Ben said, it's almost like they're growing the game so much that it's like a negative. Like do this halfway through the year.
I just hope their sleep schedule is still messed up until after they play the Cardinals. That'd be nice.
Well, I mean, they did the London series the last two seasons they could without COVID. They are doing the London series again this year. They're doing something else this year, too. I forget where. France or something?
This is part of their – they're doing a stadium series.
They're taking a page out of the NFL's book.
Yeah.
Well, another important thing to think about, who's their star pitcher?
Yamamoto.
Yeah, he got a start today and only went 1 inning and or whatever. He gave up 5 runs. He was terrible. I mean, that is his major league debut in South Korea, and it was terrible.
3 a.m. Pacific time, so no one saw it anyway. They're not going to care. It's going to be perfectly fine. Yeah. I mean, literally 3 a.m. in L.A. If you wanted to wake up and see the first start of your high expectation young starter that they got from Japan, how many Dodgers fans do you think were actually up at 3 a.m. watching the game? I would say maybe a couple.
I think that's their punishment for having great Pac-12 games on at 10 o'clock Eastern time. They get to wake up early and midway through a Dodger game.
That's their punishment for spending $1 billion this year in free agents.
A friend of mine who had a couple years in L.A. from Chicago but moved to L.A. for a couple years once told me that that's the best place to live for football Sundays because it's 10, 1, and 5 o'clock versus 12, 3, and 7.
No, I think Central's got the best.
Well, that's us now in college. I mean, this guy, like, I imagine by the time we're like, old grumpy men, we're going to be like, oh, Sunday Night Football's not even on until 7. I'm going to bed. It's probably going to be more like that. But for the time being, Central's got it pretty good. We come back. It's time for March Madness. You're listening to the Red Zone. All right, we teased it at the top of the show, but now it's time for the last 15 minutes. We know why everyone's here today. If you're just joining us, this is the Red Zone Break, focusing on Hootie, Mike, and Finelli. I don't think I introduced this at the beginning. I'm so used to just kind of like rolling with it, but it is March Madness time. And there was a nice little dinner break, but now the games are back well underway. There was some awesome games today. I will try to go over the day's games. I'm trying to find them in order. So I will do it around the horn.
I'll run it through. Michigan State beating Mississippi State 69-51. Duquesne over BYU 71-67. Creighton over Akron 77-60. Arizona over Long Beach State 85-65. UNC over Wagner a lot to a little. Illinois Fighting Illini 85-69 over Morehead State. Oregon beating number 6 South Carolina 87-73. Dayton somehow beating Nevada on a 17-0 run, 63-60, and then it's just the games going on right now.
It's been a good day. My belly's full. I'm feeling really good. This is a national holiday for me every year, just the first 4 days of March Madness. Nothing too crazy, I would say, yet. I feel like a lot of people were calling Duquesne and Oregon to upset over their respective 6 seeds that they beat, so... it's been a good day. I don't think any brackets are necessarily busted unless you had some crazy run thus far. But, it's been a good day of college basketball, and I'm just so happy we're back. It feels so good. It feels so good to say that is March Madness.
All right, can I dip back in the Bears real quick? Joey LeMaster texted me and said he loved the Mitch Trubisky question in that segment. I said I felt like Brian Windhorst in the meme where he's like leaning back with his hands and on First Take, and he's like, let me ask you. He was talking about like Rudy Gobert and the Jazz or something like that. He was cooking. That's how I felt. So I appreciate the shout out from Joey, because he said he loved the Mitch Trubisky question. But yeah, let's get back into March Madness. Yeah, it's been an interesting day. I saw a post and it was SpongeBob with his coffee just sitting there lonely, and somebody said like waiting for the bracket busting game, and all the comments were like McNeese over Gonzaga, which we talked about already. But I feel like we got a couple really good games so far. I don't think people were high on Duquesne because of the whole like LeBron connection and stuff. But I think a lot of people took BYU pretty far. Like I know of a few people already who brought BYU to the at least the Sweet 16, and they were already foiled in that regard. So their potential points have already gone down. Other than that, we'll wait to see. I guarantee you there will be some kind of crazy upset tonight. Whether Tennessee loses, I doubt it.
Oakland's up over Kentucky 22-17.
That would be a huge one.
Wait, what is the score in that game?
22-17. It's still early, but that'd be catastrophic for me.
I have Kentucky winning.
That's both of our champs.
We've been talking about this morning. I have Kentucky winning the whole thing.
McNeese just started as well.
I have Kentucky winning the whole thing. How's Antoni Reeves doing?
Oh, for Kentucky?
Yeah.
Hold on, let me take a look.
I'm pulling it
so
up.
For Kentucky, Antoni Reeves, 2 rebounds, 6 points.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, Reeves just kind of was that guy when he moved on to Kentucky.
He especially in the tournament last year. He was really good last year, specifically in the tournament. He kind of had like a coming out party then, and then won Sixth Man of the Year in the SEC. But he was good all this year. But he kind of goes awesome in the tournaments.
Yeah. Did we get a winner? Hold on. Before we go back to the tournament, did we get a, like, are we officially calling it for 3 up, 3 down, and do we have a winner of that?
No, yeah, good point.
We didn't have, I don't know if we officially called it. I think I might have taken it.
The standings for 3 up, 3 down, Mikey the winner with 18 wins, Ben, Steve with 17, me with 14, guest only one appearance, but 3-3.
Their win percentage doesn't even matter.
Yeah. No, I mean, we all played still the same amount of games.
Yeah, so. I know. I'm saying for skiing.
Skiing. Oh, 500.
Don't skiing 500. 3-3.
Man, I'd like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank 2 years in a row of losing pick six. I think my junior year, I actually lost pick six outright.
I'd like to thank Mikey deciding that we weren't going to do pick six heading into the conference tournaments on a whim.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Well, no, it was well, you mean 3 up, 3 down? Yeah, we were gonna, but then I was looking it over and I was like, I don't want to pick Valley games because like we have a crew there calling the Valley games. Little did I know they'd only be there for like 12 hours. I don't want to like do the conference tournament games. I said we could maybe do it the week after, but that was spring break. I was thinking we could do 3 up, 3 down today for March Madness, which would have been kind of fun. Maybe we'll do that next week for the Sweet 16 games.
Yeah.
I like kind of interesting. We can bring it back. We could, the show goes on the, see if we can fix the standings up just for one more week with Sweet 16. We could do pick them for all 16 Sweet 16 games. But by then, some of those games will have tipped off is a problem.
Because
it'll be what? They'll have a break this week and then
there's four games on Thursday.
Right. So we'll maybe have to do 12 or something.
We could just lock them in before they start.
That's true. We could do that and we could like, and then if you have like an embarrassing pick, you have to like present it in shame. Like, I took Kentucky, and then everyone else is like laughing and pointing at you like, they lost this morning.
No, but this is what I told you and colleague Alex Berger this in the office. This is the one month
this is true.
That you can have some crazy sports take and no one can really say anything.
This is true.
Unless you're taking like a 16 over a 1, but if that hits, you're a genius. So
good point.
This is the one month where you can't. I don't think you have to laugh at anyone. It's just, it's madness.
That's what's your strategies for your bracket? Is it alphabetical order? Is it just record? Is it?
I have a couple strategies. I was telling you this earlier. I always try and go with an unpopular champion pick. It worked for me last year with UConn. And this year, I picked Iowa State, and I only do one bracket, and I do it with a pool of people. And when the brackets all went live this morning, I looked through and see who's picking who. Obviously, a lot of Purdue's and Houston's and whatnot. I was the only one with Iowa State. As a 2-seed, I think that's pretty good value. My other thing is average of the first round, 8 to 9 upsets, 8 to 9 every year. So I always just have 8 to 9 upsets that I really like. And I'm a big Ken Pom guy as well.
That's a good little nugget there. Yeah.
I was more on like the 3-point field goal percentage one, and I don't just want to say it point blank, but like I was like, there's only like certain stats I like to look at. And last night, for some reason, making my bracket, I was like, yes, I'm picking teams that shoot the 3 really well. So that's why I picked Kentucky to win it all. which I'm like really walking on eggshells saying because they're losing right now, but it's early. And it was Chuck Swirsky at the Bulls game one of this year when Ben and I met him with Tom LaMonica, who told us that the thing you got to look at for teams that win basketball games is who shoots the three ball better. And then the Bulls proceeded to lose by like 30 to the Thunder. And the Thunder shot, of course, like 20 points better in the three-point percentage. So I have been living and dying by the three ball since then, and I liked that pick. I also took Baylor to go to the national championship, which is kind of a unique pick. But again, they were really good on offense, especially with the three ball, and I liked the thought. Kentucky also has a really fast-paced offense. Like Ben talked about this morning, you got to pick the fast-paced offense. And yeah, that's going to get clipped in about an hour if Oakland somehow finds a way to beat Kentucky.
Yeah,
Braden,
yeah.
What was your strategy? You told me you guys had some thoughts last night by record, things like that. But what did you go with?
So when I first started doing brackets, I was like 10, and I would get paper brackets and I'd fill them out. And those were some of the better brackets that I did scoring wise. I talked to you, maybe some other people. I was one game away the year that Louisville won. I had Michigan winning instead, and that's what cost me.
Is that Trey Burke's year?
That was the Trey Burke. That was the compound fracture for Kevin Ware year. Mm. But I mean, Louisville really was cheating, so really technically I won. But either way, Big Ten was about all I knew at the time, and that was the one year that Big Ten like really, really went deep, and I was a big Ten fanboy that year, so it worked out. And like ever since then, I've learned more and more about college basketball and paid more attention to stats, and it has just failed me every time. I've gotten a phone and like apps and using like Yahoo Sports to pick, and it'll like give you like info on a team, and it's just been worse and worse. So I was like, I'm gonna print a paper bracket and I'm gonna ignore everything about the stats. I'm not gonna take a look at net, which is what I was using for my conference tournament brackets. And I am just going to pick based off of kind of the same strategy that I used to, which is like, what teams do I know? What sort of history do I remember from these teams? What would just like, what teams do I not believe in? Stuff like that. And kind of not a very, you know, specific method of the madness, but that is the method.
In other words, what you're saying, you pick from here and here
for the heart,
the
and
people
the,
listening,
the
it's
head,
the heart
yeah.
and the brain.
Yeah. No one's watching.
Is someone watching?
No.
We actually do have an audience right now.
We do. We have the DJs. We have the DJs that are coming in after our shift just patiently waiting, but no one's watching. We don't have like a Pardon My Take cam. That'd be pretty funny because you would see us just kind of messing around with each other, holding up a finger if we want to make a point. We have a good system. Ben?
I don't have a point. I just
See, I'm so conditioned that I figured like when you held up your finger that you had a point to make.
Oh, hold on. Colorado State, 11 points at half.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed.
Wow. Who are they playing again?
Texas.
I changed.
Texas, Steve. But Colorado State was one of the first four, right?
Yeah. That was the only first four that I was like, yeah, maybe they'll do it. But
because there's a 10 seed, yeah.
Whoa. We just saw Nevada.
This is
blow
true.
A 17.
A race.
I will double down and say this is not happening again.
Wow.
They're going to – Colorado State
like
is not
going
to – Wait, hold on. It says it's still halftime, but now Colorado State has gained a point. So I don't know what that's about.
Well, they did more than Virginia.
I like what I'm seeing out of Iowa State right now, though. 22-7 lead.
Against who again?
Against San Diego's, the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State.
The other SD State in that same region. Shout out Nick Alonzo, my roommate. We made a – big tape bracket on our wall, and Nick engineered the bracket out of painter's tape, and I wrote the names in with my
big
block handwriting.
Tomorrow. San Diego State will lose tomorrow.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was writing in the names on the painter's tape, I was like, I couldn't always fit the full name, so I'd abbreviate. I'm like, oh, I could just do S. Diego State for San Diego State. And Nick's like, just do S. D. State. I'm like, okay. Didn't look forward in the bracket. Same region, like four lines later, South Dakota State. I'm like, Nick, look what you did.
When I wrote mine, I did SDS for San Diego State.
What'd you do for South Dakota?
I didn't write them in because it was already pre-printed.
Right. So I did –
But that's a good point.
For South Dakota, I ended up doing S.DAK.State. But then for San Diego State, they get the honor, maybe because they made the Final Four last year, of just being S.D.State. This is the bracketology that matters, by the way.
Yes.
This is like, how will Mikey write the team name on the wall? There were some interesting ones. There was no method in my madness. I fully wrote out Marquette, but for some reason for Kentucky, I just put UK. Like there was no method to the madness at all. Not even point blank. Like Colorado State, I think I just put CO.State, but Colorado, I fully wrote out Colorado. It's interesting.
Yeah.
We have 2 minutes left in the show. You got to fill it somehow.
It's just such a big deal for this month because, you know, you think back to middle and high school and it'd be like you are, you know, in your study hall and you move out to like the computer lab and it's like you've just got a bunch of people that have like pretended they're going to the bathroom to watch the games. And it's like those are the core memories that you get from a tournament as great as this. And there's nothing else like it.
In grade school, the first Thursday and Friday for me was always a sick day.
Yeah.
No matter what. In high school, we moved to iPads, so we had every game at our fingertips.
Right.
But in grade school, there was no technology around. I was always a sick day on the first Thursday and Friday of March Madness.
Did you guys hear in the office today, I forget who said it, maybe it was Joey LeMaster, somebody said it, was talking, or maybe it was Berger, was talking about how the teacher would wheel in, like, they would let you watch it during school. Was it at Berger? Yeah. I don't remember doing that happening for me. I don't think any teachers, like, fully supported
that happened in high school.
Watching the
For us.
For the Cubs, it happened in high school a couple times for me because it was, you know, obviously the World Series year and then the years preceding. But I don't think I ever had a teacher, like, say they wanted to watch March Madness. Ben, what are you emphasizing over there?
Let's make our Final Four picks before we go.
Okay. Oh, I was like, why do you keep pulling up just four? I'm like, we have 1 minute left, not four. I thought, okay, we have 30 seconds. Fine. All right, let me look at my bracket because I already did it.
You want me to rip it first?
Yeah.
My Final Four, bold one, I think, for the most part. Iowa State and St. Mary's, Houston and Creighton. I have Iowa State beating Creighton in the championship.
I have Auburn versus Illinois and Auburn beating Illinois. I have Kentucky versus Texas A&M and Kentucky winning that. And then Kentucky wins 91-78 over Clemson.
UConn versus Baylor. Baylor wins. Kentucky versus Tennessee. Kentucky wins. Kentucky wins over Baylor.
How about that? Mm. We'll see how wrong we are when we sit We're back all down different. Next week.
And every single analyst in all of college sports picks ones and twos. But you get much better here on the Red Zone.
So does the President of the United States.
Yep. It's everyone's picking. I mean, your mom's got the chalk bracket, but we're deciding to go different. And lo and behold, it'll really not work out in our favor. Thanks for watching the Red Zone tonight.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson with now drives inside. Going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day. And it's good.
Curry owned the league last year.
Oh, and sure. Personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, I'm good.